Hello, everyone, and welcome to Data by the Slice. This is a podcast where we cover all things data.
In each episode, we speak with an interesting guest who share their views on data, technology, organizational aspects, architecture, and so on.
This way, we also get to know our guests, where they come from, and what they've learned. My name is Lasse.
And my name is Antti. Welcome to have a slice of data with us.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Data by the Slice. My name is Lasse, and with me, as always, is my colleague, Antti. We have a really fascinating guest on the show today, but before we get there, we have some news about the podcast itself.
Yeah, some big changes. The video is gone.
Exactly. No more faces on the screen, just voices in your ears.
Yeah, the first four episodes were proof of concept of a kind, and one of the things we wanted to test was the format. Hence, we made them as both video and audio. Based on our experience and feedback, we have now decided to focus on audio only.
Yeah, and moving to audio only allows us to focus on improving some other things too. So the sound should be better already now, and we have also tightened the structure a little bit so that we keep things in focus a little bit more. We'll still go anywhere where the conversation takes us, but we won't try to solve every possible problem in every single conversation.
Sounds good. Lasse, who's our next guest?
Yeah, our guest today is Debbie Reynolds, who is a vice president of analytic tools and platforms at Pfizer Pharmaceuticals in New York. And Debbie is someone who has worked with and been around data for a longer time, and she's seen trends come and go. Debbie's also my former boss, so I know that she will have really insightful things to say.
Do you think she can talk about the vaccine and how data has helped there?
Maybe. We should ask. The main topic of the conversation, though, is how a large and old organization becomes data-driven. So that's a fairly big topic. But our aim is for Debbie to answer that simple little question. Okay, here's our conversation with Debbie, who joins us from her home in New York. Hi, Debbie, and welcome to Data by the Slice.
Hello, Lasse. Really good to see you again, and thank you for the opportunity to partner with you again. And Antti, really nice to meet you.
It's been a while. But it's great to have you here. We're going to start with our standard questions that we ask all of our guests just to get things going. And the first one is simply, how did you get into data?
How did I get into data? I've always been around data. I started my career at Pfizer in finance, but it was really 11 years ago, shortly after our Wyeth acquisition, where I was asked to start a commercial information management team. And that was when I first got really immersed in data. It was primarily focused on external data that we were purchasing and looking at how we could strategize around how to get the most from that data. So that was my first foray.
I was wondering if we should actually start asking how people get out of data, but maybe the next one. What's the what is like a memorable or coolest data-related initiative that you worked on?
The coolest initiative I worked on was back in 2014. It started in mid-2014 and extended into 2015 when we decided to migrate most of our critical data used in analysis to the cloud. So that was an effort to create the data lake for Pfizer on the commercial side of our business, which is focused mostly on marketing. And I seem to recall that was a project you were a part of.
I still have the scars. Great. What do you have any specific topics or expectations for this conversation today? I know we kind of prepped a little bit and we have some themes, but is there something you would like to get out of this today?
I'm certainly hoping to hear a bit more about current thinking around the concept of data liquidity, that is sort of the interoperability of data, the ability to move and integrate data across an enterprise, as opposed to it being captive within individual domains. And I certainly hope out of this, I'll learn something new that I can take back to the job.
It feels like, Antti, that's an assist to you. What are you expecting, Antti, from today?
Well, I would like to follow on that how do you create these data products or data sets that help that data to move across the organization, especially in a large ones like Pfizer, and how do you tackle these issues? So kind of on the same path as Debbie is touching here.
Cool. So the challenge for me then is going to be in try and manage the conversation and make sure that we stay on point, at least to some extent. But let's get into the topic. Let's talk about what it means to become or be data-driven in a large organization, whatever that means. Debbie, you've been at Pfizer for quite some time, so you know the ins and outs of this massive organization. It's an old one. It's globally spread out across pretty much all of the countries and has multiple divisions, business units, functions, and whatnot, and it keeps transforming. So how do you make an organization like that data-driven when there are so many dimensions to deal with?
One of the most critical things to do is to shift from talking about data just for the sake of data and actually talk about it from a business back perspective. And what I mean by that is, what is it that our business, whatever the industry you're in, whatever function within that industry you're in, you're trying to achieve? What are these opportunities? What is that impact that you want to have to either extend your business, to affect, in our case, have improve health outcomes? Right. And when you start talking in that context about around the critical problems or major questions you want to address, you start to then link back, well, what do you need to know in order to do that? And what is the information that's available that helps me with it? And I have found when you talk in those terms, you're actually focusing around building a solution to address that. Data becomes an enabler as opposed to a power tool to wield over who controls the effort that you're trying to pursue. And I have found that has really helped a lot of the conversation to be more forward-looking. And it also, again, takes it from just being about, oh, we have a bunch of data somewhere. Who has it? Can I get it? Am I allowed to use it? It aligns around a common goal and purpose.
Goal and purpose. I mean, and that obviously makes a lot of sense. Earlier, you mentioned that you were interested in talking about data liquidity, so data flowing across the organization. It's one thing to sort of distribute, but it's another thing to build those connection points or interfaces or whatever that is. Antti, I know you're eager to get into the topic of data mesh, but Debbie, what is this paradigm of data mesh? What does it mean to you? I know it's not something that you're deep into, but it's a familiar concept.
When, I hear data mesh, when I heard it for the first time, what came to my mind was connections, right? It's literally that ability to make connections across your data. It's building in logical connections within the data so that the data is moving from being just a static element to something that is information. It is allowing you, in fact, you mentioned earlier about this notion of data assets or data products. Data mesh is, my best understanding of it, is the enabler to allow you to actually create a net new asset out of the data that has its own intrinsic value for the organization. And it also facilitates understanding of the data for broader users. So it's a really critical enabler when we talk in terms of the old term data democratization.
So it's really interesting that what you said earlier, that we have to drive business, that we should focus on business. And in the concept of data mesh, you have this putting the sort of the data people close to the business to actually solve these and produce these data sets and work with it. Do you see that actually happening in real life? Do you see these data engineers, data specialists go into these business teams to help them out? Has there been struggle in working this way? And how does it work with you guys?
I think it's increasingly recognized as a critical need, particularly as we've been making a lot more advances in machine learning algorithms and the development of more predictive models where you really need that connectivity. I would say to you that it has been a hurdle because much of the data organization has been focused by necessity around operations and transactions and building data pipelines to feed downstream applications. And so the skill set of those colleagues has not evolved and kept pace with the advancement and analytics and some of these needs of being able to connect with the business. So our current objectives is to move more in that direction as a way to bring the data people to the business people so they understand, so that our data folks understand the why.
I wanted to go back to those, because earlier when I sort of opened this can of worms about around data mesh, but you also used the term data democratization, and it got me thinking. Because data democratization was a big theme a few years ago or some years ago. Everyone was trying to do it. But that comes from an idea of it going from the inside out or like from top or central to outside. Whereas data mesh as a principle is more about the outside already being there, like the peripheries, the business units, the domains are already doing the stuff. So there's no need to democratize because they're already in their own worlds. Do you think there's something behind that? And is that why democratization was a little bit difficult to do? Because you had the assumption that it had to go from the inside to the out, but the outside already had their thing going on. Or am I totally lost here?
It's interesting. To tell you the truth, I hadn't really thought about it that way, but I think there is something to it. My observation, it has been more that data has been viewed as property. Okay. And it is a property that has value, but the goal is to control it. And so you have a hoarding, and therefore you don't make those connections. So when I think about what you're talking about as far as, you know, thinking about making it, you know, the outside in, I think that's an important first step of understanding that the data in and of itself doesn't have value if it's not connected to the business process. It's not telling some sort of story or being utilized to derive some sort of insight to advance the business. And so going back to my earlier point around trying to be business back, which I think might be a little bit tied to what you're talking about, that's what is so important about, you know, how you go about achieving you know, the true vision, I think that was intended of data democratization. The true vision of data democratization, in my opinion, wasn't just data out there for the sake of data out there, because to what we're talking about, it's meaningless. Okay, so I have it, but it's again, it's embedding that intelligence, and the good intelligence is very much tied to the previous point we were talking about, which is good, smart data engineers working with really smart business people together, solving business problems. And that my best understanding of data mesh is that it's trying to act as that enabler and that mechanism to allow that to happen.
You talked about building those teams and you had sort of hurdles to overcome. What were the biggest hurdles and how did you overcome them?
What are the biggest hurdles? We are very...
The world isn't ready yet? I thought it was ready already.
We're very much in flight. And I would tell you one of the ways in which we're actually trying to overcome the hurdles is in the context of reorganization. And it's actually creating roles that are very specific to having to produce these types of data products and data assets, which is going to require that connectivity. I'm not usually a big fan of using organizational design to drive good practice and the right ways of working. But in this case, I think it's essential. And part of doing that means separating what has to happen to support what I had been describing as the operations and the transactions and those data pipelines, because they need care and feeding. They're important, but segregate that from people that are really going to be steeped in trying to understand how to derive these data products and being real, true experts on the value that can be unlocked.
Yeah, the interesting ideas here. I mean, you also talked about this earlier belief that data is a property and it has to be secured. And we use terms like unlocking the value. All of the language even that we're using seems to suggest that we're coming from a time where data was somehow like very, had to be secured and we're very careful about using it. But now we're trying to find ways how we can use it, exchange it. And you also mentioned data liquidity and data mesh instead talks about building those interfaces. But when we spoke earlier, you talked about a recent case of this intra-organizational data flows or whatever we want to call it, data liquidity, and how that helped with the supply chain management for the, obviously everyone wants to hear because you're from Pfizer about the COVID-19 vaccine, but you talked about the use of data to help with the supply chain management for the vaccine. Can you talk about this as an example of where data actually has to flow between different units?
Sure. Yeah, so really begins with supply. And when I refer to supply, I'm talking about all the ingredients that go into actually producing the actual little tiny vial that we've all seen in the news as the picture of the actual vaccine. So it became critical to understand how much of those ingredients and components do we have, first and foremost, to manufacture vaccine for the clinical trials. Because you will note the trials were larger than most trials out of the gate that you have. Some of the most diverse population from a population perspective for the trials and the fastest I've ever seen to do. And so it was absolutely essential that you had what you needed at the trial sites. Once that was done, once that was underway, the whole expectation was we're going to have this medicine in the pharmacies, in the hospitals, in the stadiums, wherever it was going to be where people were going to get vaccinated. And being able to rapidly know how much you could manufacture in order to be able to communicate to external stakeholders of how much you could realistically ship, understanding what was going to be required in terms of the distribution network, given all of the requirements for keeping it frozen for extended periods of time, required a level of exchange of information internal to Pfizer between our R&D organization, between our global supply organization, to our finance organization, okay, for tracking for sales orders. That's where that becomes relevant, to our partnerships externally with pharmacy, with hospital, with the government. It required a complete exchange of information so that at any point in time, you knew where shipments were. At any point in time, you knew what vials were not being used at vaccination sites and what were you going to do about it to avoid waste. And so it was, that was a perfect example. And I think it was an epiphany, quite frankly, I think within Pfizer, to see how powerful it can be when you really share critical information. And that common goal, going back to that point about what's the business value, that common goal is we've got to get a medicine out here to stop this pandemic. Extraordinary how it mobilized people and the laser focus. And suddenly all those obstacles that everyone brings up, all of the administrative hurdles that get introduced that slow things down, evaporated.
It's obviously like a super interesting case and example of where, as you described, there are different, again, if we use the data mesh terminology, different domains that in this case actually had to exchange information, because we speak about this with a lot of people and essentially we hear that in most organizations, most of the time, people are fine in their own camps or in their own domains and units. And this is, you know, they run their daily operations. You don't have a need to talk with the others. But here's obviously a moment where you had a massive need to exchange information. And I guess when that happens, the value created is much, much larger than when it happens within the domains. But Antti, what do you think? I mean, we've spoken about this so many times, the need to let the domains be on their own, and then the need to have these data product interfaces. Isn't this like a case exactly for when that is needed?
Yeah, I think what's really interesting about this case that W brought up is that it's not only that we're talking, or it sounds like it's not only talking about how Pfizer's different teams come together and what kind of interfaces they have. How do you define the data products? How can you make them usable? But it's also to government, to logistic companies and all of these different companies, different entities coming together in order to solve this. But how hard was it to define these interfaces and make the data sort of discoverable and usable? These kind of traditional data issues when we look at this case.
It's a really great point about how to do that. And what we learned in this case is we actually partnered externally to help build some of the ontologies that were needed in order to allow a lot of that information to work together and to be usable by the various stakeholders. And it was really a learning on our part that is something that we have to build even more capability internally in order to do that. But it was external partnership to help with that.
I've earlier said when we talked about ontologies and definitions, I said, let them all define the customer in a way that is relevant for them. There's no need for an overarching customer definition. But actually, there are times when you do need the ontology that defines that customer in this case is the same thing as customer in this other case. So here it differs. So there's, I guess it's, you know, it's not either or. You have to have both the domain-specific definitions, but also you have to have a language to communicate across domains. Let's talk more about this specific concept of data products, which is, in this case, what we're talking about is just the way of exchanging information. Onto you as our data mesh expert, what is your dilemma? What's your challenge with data products? We talked about this quite a lot.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that we kind of touched upon is, of course, the interfaces. How do you make them? How do you make the data products discoverable and usable, interoperable? But I mean, a lot of times when looking at our customers, we might have legacy systems. We might have very, very heterogeneous application landscape. You know, old systems, new systems, bot systems, home built systems, everything. And to start producing data products out of these systems can be quite a handful. Have you run it? Is this an issue at Pfizer? And do you see it as an issue? And how do you go about tackling that?
I think it is an issue. And I think one of the ways that we're tackling it, it's not going to sound very glamorous or sexy, is we're learning. We're trying to understand what it is, what does it mean. We're actually also having to align on definitions of data products because people are using the term constantly. And depending on who you're talking to, it means different things. So what we're doing right now to really understand what it's going to take to do this properly is we're actually embedding it as part of a particular program that we have going on right now, which is a critical initiative that is tied into our go-to-market strategy. And in order for it to work, we are going to have the ability to produce these data products at scale and get to a point where they are providing input into a lot of automation that we're going to need to do for some things. And I'm hedging here because I can't disclose too much, but the ability for my team specifically to be able to produce these data products is really critical. And we're basically learning and researching how to do it, looking at accelerators for that process as a way to do it. So not the most, it's not a technical answer to your question because you're still learning, but that's what we're trying to do is understand what those best practices are and to reach out to people that are, who know it, that are good at it to help guide us around what we build.
how much do you think about, you know, what is central, what should be done centrally and what can be distributed out? Is there, have you found this balance already, or are you kind of still looking for it?
We're still looking for that balance, but I think we at this juncture are really pushing ourselves to think less is more, so that the more we push out, it might be better to allow for a higher degree of focus, as well as that focus being channeled towards more value generating opportunities with data.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine, or at least what I've run into, is that going back to these like legacy applications and such, it might be that, you know, you have this very old system, you don't have too many developers or engineers or anyone around it to actually help to get data out of it and so on. And at times you kind of have to go from a central perspective and start helping these domains to work with these legacy applications. Have you had any of this kind of issues at Pfizer?
No.
moving on.
Well, if I'm understanding your question when you talk about the domains, you know, so give me a concrete example. Let's make this a little bit more interactive here. When you talk about these domains and helping them, what does that mean for you?
When it comes to domains, I talk about more of like a business domain. So you have a specific problem that the domain is solving. So if I imagine you might have HR working with systems, and HR is meant to produce these new data products for others to use. Then if we can think about manufacturing being a domain, that's a huge domain, and that probably have subdomains, and these subdomains then work with, you know, some type of a system that where they kind of model their landscape. So I would imagine that especially in manufacturing, you might actually have very specialized, very old systems that are just being used, but it's kind of hard to get data out of them. And in order to get the data out of them, you need to have, you know, of course, people, data engineers to do that. And then these domains, so this manufacturing, for example, might not actually have that capability. So you have to get that expertise in. And do you have like a central function that goes in and helps these different domain teams to do it? Or are you able to block the people or sort of hire people into these domains? Or are these domains actually, do they have the capability that I'm kind of completely wrong here, that they couldn't actually produce the data products?
Okay, thank you for that. We do have central experts. You'll laugh at me. Those central experts actually in these examples sit in my team. What is increasingly happening is that within the domains, they are developing some of the same expertise, which is actually really beneficial, because in a resource-constrained landscape, we need that collaboration. So what it does is it allows us to do things like create the common data models. We create we build certain data products that can be used. And then from that juncture, these other areas can now tap in and leverage those for solving some of the problems that they're trying to do, whether it's some sort of app to pick data quality outliers on the manufacturing line, or any other type of application, like a control tower to monitor and regulate and get automated alerts. What is happening with us is different domains are at different levels of sophistication in their ability to do that, and the degree of the need, which is what you're talking about, for central help. You brought up HR, for example. In the case of the HR space, I think they're also becoming very data focused and very data driven. There, though, because it's less in service of operations per se, because you have lots of software that's out there that helps you do, you know, tracking, whatever it is, payroll, you name it. They're really trying to get at what are the right kinds of questions that we need to be asking that data is going to help us address. And so that is more of where the partnership is. Over time, I think in some cases like that, it is probably going to stay more central because of certain controls you need to have, because of privacy issues, because of the evolution of skill sets and in terms of organization. So I suspect but we will wind up evolving much more in a hybrid construct. So you'll have something like an HR organization on one extreme, have something like manufacturing where they're very steeped in data and a lot of that depth of understanding of the data on the other. And so the central will have to adapt itself accordingly. So we might serve up with the APIs for manufacturing, go have fun. HR, much more hands-on engagement as one example.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because I was listening earlier, Debbie, when you described the organizational thinking and the sort of reorganization of thinking too. I mentioned this earlier too, that things like data mesh and other of these trends, they typically come from an era and from people who have been in companies that have been around for maybe 10, 15, 20 years max, where software and digital applications were the core of the business. But Pfizer's been around since 1849. I just looked it up. and it's a company that's been around for a very, very long time. All the functions are established. So then you get these, the new people coming in talking about data mesh and data products and data domains and organizing by where the data is. But that's very different to a company that's as old as Pfizer. Or is it? What do you see? Because it sounded to me a bit like, in the organization now, you're actually considering the data value streams, maybe to some extent.
It's an evolution. I think that there is a lot of receptivity and a lot of energy in exploring these things. I think, and that's marked because I think companies like, these Pfizer, these older companies are looking at these younger companies and looking at how they're able to impact and influence the marketplaces where they operate. And we're saying we have a sense of urgency that we've got to do something different. We have to make an impact because of, how things are evolving in the healthcare landscape. And so becoming more facile at these things is necessary. So I think there is a lot of receptivity. People are really trying to learn. I think the challenge is what came up a little earlier, which is there's the calibration of the investment in the old versus the new. There is the ramp up of skill, because in the life sciences, I would contend expertise is really important. Because there's uniquenesses. We're in a highly regulated environment. So it's not enough just to kind of come in with like really good, cool technical skills. This is how you do it. That contextual understanding is essential. So it takes time to kind of ramp up your own skills. And there's also, the challenges of recruiting and hiring people who can help that acceleration process, but I definitely think the appetite's there. And then you have to just figure out how these things work together, because there's a lot of legacy infrastructure and processes that is not likely to go away, because the effort to make it go away is probably way more than makes sense at that point. So how do you do the balance shift and shift the right stuff over to the new? So I think those are some of the things that are messy, but I don't think there's a lack of interest. I'd say understanding is what's challenging. People are really trying to understand what does this stuff really mean? And that can be very hard.
Yeah. And speaking of that understanding and the knowledge and data awareness or data literacy, one of the topics that Debbie, you and I worked on together for many, many years ago was data catalogs. And that's a theme that is often connected with data mesh. And it's also one topic that is very recurring for us, at least here in the Nordics. Most of the organizations are in some shape or form looking at data discovery, data catalogs. But you were one of the very early data leaders investing in data catalogs. Gartner called it the new black in data management back a few years ago. I think it's 3 years ago now. How do you see data catalogs today? Was it worth the investment?
It was worth the investment, without a doubt, because it particularly in some areas where they started migrating into the cloud very rapidly, and it was voluminous amounts of data, the highly specialized data. You needed a mechanism by which you could organize and help understanding of what's there. They also have served as a really elegant impetus to have better conversations about data governance. I hate that term, so as you well know, Lasse, but it
me too.
But it has precipitated healthy dialogue, you know, around stewardship, around data literacy, and all of those things. The tricky part is they're hard. Data catalogs are really hard. Maintaining them, they're living things. They're living. They're constantly growing and evolving. And keeping up on that and getting the village to embrace the collective role in nurturing and curating that is really hard. And it's really tough. And so the challenge you run into is you've got these investments in these data catalogs, but the full value is not being exploited in terms of really helping accelerate data literacy in the organization and facilitating these collaborative workspaces that you're trying to power to, you know, take advantage of these assets.
Yep.
So you have a long background in data catalogs, and one trend it's what I'm kind of seeing is that instead of putting every single data asset we have into a data catalog, we're I guess going more for putting the sort of the curated data sets there, the maybe the higher level. Do you see that kind of trend happening? And is there some other trends you see in the field of data catalog? Where is the world of data catalog going, or where you wish it would go?
I like what you're proposing in terms of thinking about not everything going in there. So I'm making a note of that as being something to take back, to, truth be told, because I think we have kind of we approached it a little bit more like bottoms up. Mm. And so I think that is, I think it's a useful food for thought. I think in some places we don't have a choice. We've got to do it bottoms up in order for it all to work based on what it's in service of. But in other areas, I think we could probably look at that. The other place where I think it's evolving, and interestingly, and Lasse, you may remember this, when we were first doing this and we were focused specifically in the commercial domain, it actually, the data catalogs were being leveraged more as a search and discover for analytics. We talked about it as Google for analytics, as a framing of it. So the idea was there's something you want to know or want to understand around, you know, has there been an analysis of X product and how it performs in a certain market? And then using that exploration as a way to then drill in to understand what is the data? How is that data being used? What we're doing now is we're kind of marrying the two. And what I mean by that is we're saying there is a need in an organization to simply search and discover for the sake of search and discover. Do we have X data? If we have X data, how is it being used? And what are some of the things I need to know about it, right, to help with that literacy part, all right? At the same time, we have organizations that are like, yeah, I know what the data is. I'm interested in understanding more in depth around the actual ways in which the data has been used, whether for modeling or something else, okay? Because I want to see if I can grab that and adapt that for my own uses. So it's kind of calibrating user personas. So the way we've started to talk about things is in this concept of you have communities of directional users of data and analytics. You have the middle tier, if you will, of good, solid business analysts. And then you have sort of the creator, like the real hands-on, more developer type. So how can we use catalogs to help serve those different constituencies? Don't know if that makes sense, but...
It makes sense, and it's interesting to hear the evolution there. You talked about, you mentioned the scary word data governance, talked about ownership. Speaking of catalogs, our earlier guest on the show, we had Aaron from Alation, and the question he planted for our next guest, which is you, is around ownership of data. And so do you see that the question was around if there's been an evolution of ownership of data shifting from IT to business over the last decade or so? Do you see that there's been, from your point of view, has there been a shift of ownership of data from IT to business?
I think there has been a conceptual shift to understand that the data belongs to the whole organization, to the enterprise, to the business. But I think because of the mechanics, we're still a bit in IT owns the data because IT owns the processes to deliver the data. So I think we're still on the early part of that journey.
So in a sense, it's kind of like we have to plug in the governance or the data catalog, and all of these have to be plugged into your organization in order to fit it into the business. That's what we are after. Yeah. So there's this concept of non-invasive data governance. How do you see that?
I'm really intrigued by it. I don't know much about it. I'm hearing about it now. So I would be very interested to learn more about it, because the journey historically we've been on with governance has had fits and starts. And it's because you can't just take a generic framework and lay it on a really complex enterprise.
Yeah. I think it was a colleague I was discussing about non-invasive data governance just yesterday, and we described it as it's the traditional approach is the guys in the suits from the big fancy consulting company coming in with their massive frameworks with all the boxes and diagrams. That approach is very invasive, but non-invasive is about identifying the people that are already doing the tasks around data governance without it being called data governance. And because most of those tasks are already being done, we just don't know it, we don't recognize it, we don't call it data governance. And it's a really intriguing approach because obviously nobody wants another layer or framework or governance structure on top of all the ones we already have.
I like it. So that'll be a follow-up.
Cool. In each time, we obviously want to be respectful of your time, Debbie, too. We'll move towards the end of the conversation. In the beginning, you mentioned, some of the topics or kind of drivers for you in this conversation, too. Did you feel that you got anything out of this conversation?
Yeah, I think it validated a lot of what we've been talking about internally, and it's validating some of the path forward that we're looking at for doing things. It has also revealed there's still more research and learning that I need to do to kind of pull it all together. So very helpful. But I do think we're on the right track. We're following the right breadcrumbs. So,
Antti, what about you?
I think one thing that Debbie, you mentioned was really interesting and gave a really refreshing view on was that when we talked about the domain of HR, maybe not having the capabilities to have to actually work with the data and you have to come in from center to help it, and you kind of call it a hybrid solution. I think that makes a lot of sense. It sounds reasonable. That's how you have to work in your company. If your company is in that state, you have to find ways to do it. And also the emphasis on the business case that let's use data to help business. It's all about the business in the end. So it really, really nice to hear those thoughts.
Great.
Debbie, do you have any reading or listening or watching tips for our audience? It doesn't have to be about data at all. Preferably actually isn't about data, but anything you want to recommend to our listeners?
I'll go with watching because I don't watch a lot, but I'll be a little bit, use an American euphemism, sappy. But during the pandemic, you know, there's not a lot you're doing and going on. I discovered a Canadian show that was marvelous called Schitt's Creek. And what made the show marvelous is that it used humor and a difficult situation to show how people can come together. And it really just what matters is your underlying humanity and decency. So that fast forward to now has precipitated this new joy that I get out of Ted Lasso, which is this wonderful show about an American football coach who goes over to England to coach a real football team. And it's absolutely delightful for the same reasons, which is just being a really good person and caring. And I do feel really strongly after what everyone has been through for the last year and a half. That's all we've got at the end of the day. We've got that and data. Those are the only things that are always true.
Yeah. I spent the time also to watch Ted Lasso and enjoyed it a lot. And I think it just won an Emmy or some award. Yep. So cool stuff.
Jason Sudeikis is great. Ante, did you have any tips for today?
No, I'll just follow Debbie. Just Ted Lasso. Enjoy it. Have fun.
You too.
Cool. Is there a question, Debbie, that you want to plant for our next guest? Something data related this time?
Yeah. Where have they seen it done successfully? And what was the secret?
What was the secret? Yes, the secret sauce. That's what we all want to know.
Yes.
Good. Debbie, it's been a pleasure to have you on our podcast, and obviously super exciting to speak with you again. Hopefully we'll talk again soon. But for now, we'll close for today, and thank you also obviously to our listeners for tuning in. But Debbie, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Lasse. Wonderful as always to see you. Ante, great to meet you. I wasn't too intimidated, but I will have to probably reach out to you to learn more.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, Debbie. That was interesting, Lasse. I actually learned something new about your past as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, Debbie was a fantastic people lead, and I learned so much from her and from working in that team. Substance-wise, though, what did you pick up?
Data liquidity. I mean, it's a really nice word, and it describes the flow of data over a large company. The simple words just, you know, make a lot of sense. Coming together over data to solve business problems and finding new ways of working that fit the company. That was kind of key to me. And you know, in this case, the company is extremely old. It has seen a lot during its life. And as Debbie mentioned, you have to constantly learn. The company learns, the people learn. Did you learn new things from your old colleague, Lasse?
Well, I mean, speaking of learning, she is constantly and continuously curious, and that's really important in today's world. But the thing I picked up is that in the end, whatever words we use, be it a data product or API or interface or liquid data, but it's all about communication and the exchange of data and information. it's all the same. We just use different terms for it. The other thing I picked up is that skilled people still play a huge role in enabling this exchange. So technology alone is not the answer. And Debbie mentioned several times how it's about organizing people and managing their skills and knowledge. Although building org charts is not her favorite mechanism.
On that note, our next guest, Marko Taipale, who is a colleague of ours here at Solida, will talk more about organizing in organizations at scale.
Yes, indeed. But for now, this was our episode. So make sure you like, follow, and subscribe to our podcast so you get our next episode and all future episodes in your queue. For now, we thank you for sharing a slice of data with us. Be well and see you soon. Bye for now.